Welcome back to Being Curious with Nomi. My name is Madeline. I am a certified professional coach. If you have been here before, you know who we are and what we do. But if this is your first time listening or your first time listening in a while, we welcome you. I am here with my colleague and mother, Cynthia Garrett, who's a licensed mental health counselor and coach. And this podcast is all about applying our favorite skill in our lives, which is curiosity, being curious about different things, different pieces of information. You'll hear us talking about books, about papers, but most importantly, about our lives. That is actually the core of what we do on this podcast, and it's very apropos that's how this gets introduced, because we've been on a hiatus for a few months, and a big part of that hiatus was that we were doing the work, and we believe in self as instrument, which is why all of our clients benefit from the work we do with our eyes wide open on ourselves. And to kick off this episode, I actually wanted to share that we first recorded it, and then we came back, and now we're re-recording it because the first version of it just didn't feel right for us. So we're back, but we wanted to share a little bit about why we went away in the first place. So Mom, what would you say is the reason, what are the reasons for you of where we've been and why we went away for a couple of months?
Yeah. So we went away from this. And for me, I went away from my life, the trajectory of my life that I was on. All right. I was in a really great growth pattern. I was discovering things about myself that I hadn't discovered before. And I was leaning into joy, and I was leaning into abundance, and I was leaning into this sort of zone of genius, which is from a book that we read, the Big Leap, that the quote that was my mantra was, I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. And then life happened. And I went back to the life and to the mindset and to the hunkering down, all growth needs to come to a grinding halt of, I call it, for lack of a better word, a scarcity mindset. I got very fearful. The things and the people I cared about were suffering. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put them all on this little drama triangle. I was saying this to a friend not too long ago. I said, so I just decided to put my loved ones on this drama triangle because I convinced myself that was the best place, because then I could contain it and I would just jump on and rescue. As we know, that doesn't always happen. So that's where I've been. Where have you been?
Before we dive into that, I just want to say for our listeners who don't know what the drama triangle is, one, I go into it in a YouTube video, and it was one of literally our last episode that we republished. So if you want to learn more about the drama triangle, you can dive in there. But just as a refresher, the drama triangle, the Cartman drama triangle, has three corners to it, like any good triangle does. One of which is the victim. I don't love this term. There's a little disclaimer as well when we talk about the drama triangle, but victim meaning like a helplessness mindset. And then there's the rescuer and the persecutor. And so when we're putting people on drama triangles, or we're putting even ourselves, we can do the drama triangle entirely within our own minds with us playing all three roles. It's a wonderful little thought experiment. But when we put others on the drama triangle, especially in our experience, most of the time we'll be putting others in the position of victim, so we can rescue them, which is a big way that we feel good about ourselves, needed and valued. Another way we can put people on the drama triangle is as persecutor. That's usually when we ourselves are playing the role of victim. And so we are in an outward blame. And it's not just people, but environments as well. Mm-hmm. So when we're really locked into that helpless, hopeless mindset and attitude within ourselves, we get into this very blamey perspective. And when we're doing it entirely within ourselves, we can be our own persecutors, we can be helpless, and we can be waiting or trying to rescue ourselves. Oftentimes the rescuer takes on the role of overthinking for me, where I think I'm going to be rescued by an insight or a thought or an ability to just therapize myself, so to speak. So this is what the drama triangle is. And it's really important in this context, I think, very much, because it is definitely a huge signal of old life. And I could feel myself doing the same. So to answer the actual question, which is where was I? I could feel myself doing the same. And also I could feel you, Mom, putting me on one. And I think that's a really important note. And I'm sure you could feel me putting you on one. We can feel it in each other, and it drives disconnection. So one of the really honest truths is that Mom and I were disconnecting from each other. And a part of that was because things were going well, actually. And when we're not equipped to expand fully into our joy and success, it really quickly slides from excitement into fear. One of my favorite quotes is, since we're throwing them out there so quickly, fear is excitement without the breath. And as someone who is very easily overexcited and excitable about all my ideas and all of my passions and everything, excitement's an emotion that shows up frequently. And when I'm not present and breathing into that excitement, it turns into fear. And fear triggers my anxiety, triggers my overthinking spirals, makes me go into over-controlling and perfectionism tendencies. And the only safe way that I had in the past to be able to manage that was to isolate myself. And so as a result, I was going into these self-isolation spirals where I needed to figure everything out by myself, for myself. And that's actually healthy in some cases, right? When we're trying to collaborate with others and we're trying to connect with our environment, it's very powerful and helpful to figure out what we want as individuals and what we need as individuals. But the reality is that sometimes we need to be doing that clarifying in community. And when we are so deep in isolation, it can be very difficult when we realize we need to be doing it in community to take that step back into our lives because we're out of practice. So my reality is I got out of practice asking for help, out of practice leaning on people, out of practice being supported by others. That caused a huge pause in the business initiatives as we figured out what we wanted as individuals. I was also in my own overthinking spirals, hilariously documenting a lot of it. I'm very glad I documented a lot of it because I can see the threads the whole way through now of what I was actually overthinking and how consistent my thoughts and my wants and my needs were. Oftentimes we talk about anxiety and overthinking and how it takes over. It brings this air of like hopelessness to it, that like you're in it or you're out of it. And when you're in it, nothing makes sense, or all of your patterns are maladaptive, or blah, blah, blah. That's not actually how I experience it. It's mostly that I'm just overdoing it. But yeah, so that's where I was. And as a result, because Nomi is the two of us, as that wavered, or as we tested our foundations to make sure they were secure, we ended up putting pause on a few different initiatives to give ourselves the space to do so.
And for me, it was super scary because when I went into this scarcity mindset and old patterns for me, nose to the grindstone, and I was isolating in the extent that I wasn't sharing my pain. I wasn't allowing. I didn't want to be a burden. I just needed to get the job done. You know what your task is, Cynthia, and just do what you need, what you've committed to do, and keep moving forward in that way. And shutting down all joy. There was no room for joy. There was no room for expansion. There was no room for abundance. There was no room for any of it. And so I watched myself, I talked to a lot of people about this thing called dissociation. And I was actually, in my journal reflected a part of me that was going, who are you? Who's this person that's going through the motions of life, but not really living life? I'm doing the things, but I'm not living it. There's a disconnect within me of my mind, body, soul.
I think you just said something really important, which is that there was no room for joy. So this metaphor I love to use is imagining your body as a cup or a vessel, right? And it fills with liquid. I think one of the things that we don't realize is that we often think that our baseline is neutral. It's not, not in this world. There's a term for it. It's called VUCA, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. The world is the environments that we're interacting with day to day, especially so removed from nature most of the time, is in a really intense place, which means that for most of us who are paying attention, and if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you are someone who's paying attention. Our baseline's not neutral. Our baseline has a lot of grief and a lot of terror, not just sadness, grief, not just fear, terror. That creates a lot of water in the vessel. So then when you go to add joy to it, especially something so beautiful, it takes up a lot of space. It really does. Mm-hmm. That's why they're expanding. They expand within us. They stretch us. They grow us. I grow the most from laughter and play. And so as we add these really powerful emotions, especially when we're sensitive people, we tend to feel things in high volume in the first place. they can cause us to pour over. And it's funny because the thing that's at the surface is the joy, but when it spills over, it sometimes shoves some of that other water over the edge. If we're not careful, if we're not paying attention, if we don't understand the context that joy settled into us with and what else was in that vessel, because we aren't doing the introspection or we aren't aware, we don't have the skill set, nobody asks, we don't ask, right? There's a whole bunch of different reasons why we might not know what's
through
the
motions. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely.
It can be a really confusing time, and it can actually make joy feel like the threatening thing or excitement feel like the threatening thing, because that was the trigger, so to speak, of the overflow. And so you do that enough times, now joy doesn't feel safe anymore and excitement doesn't feel safe anymore. So part of why I think it's so important to look at emotional expansion within us is that, yes, sometimes we need to be pouring out and regulating down those emotions inside the cup. Sometimes also we need to graduate the cup and know that, at least for me, I care so deeply about what's going on in the world that there's always going to be grief in my cup. There's always going to be terror in my cup. There's probably going to be a lot of it because I pay a lot of attention and I really, really, really care and feel very personally responsible for creating impact in the world. I know myself. I know that I need to give myself what I need so that I can also experience that joy and excitement. And that means I need a bigger vessel. Like, we need a bigger ship.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, that's so important, right? And that was also what was missing, is because I was going so focused into the doing part of life that I was forgetting the being part. I was forgetting to check in with myself. And I remember at one point, Madeline, you kept pressuring me. It felt like pressure at the time.
It totally was pressure.
Right? You kept pressuring me with this question. What do you want to do, Mom? What's important to you about know me? And we have all these ideas and who do you want to be? And who do you want to be? And who do you want to be? And I just kept lobbing it back. So tell me who you want to be, Madeline. And what's important to you, Madeline? I was like, maybe I could cheat the system and not go internal, because in my mind, I didn't have time to do that, or I didn't, that was frivolous. That wasn't the most important task at hand, right? Mm-hmm. And so wasn't allowing myself to be curious about me, right? And really answer that question. And I remember saying to you a couple of times, I don't have time, Madeline. You don't understand. I got a lot on my plate, girlfriend, and I don't have time to be going internal and figuring out what I want to be. So you just tell me what you want to be. You tell me, and this was probably one of the pivotal points, you tell me you're okay and you've defined, and the way you're going to be okay is by clearly defining what you want to be and in the context, say, of know me. And our relationship is mom and daughter and friends and all the other roles we play in each other's life. And then I will give myself permission to be okay.
So true. And right? The thing that came to mind for me is I often do this with my husband, where this is a huge signal. I'm not checking in with myself enough. I will use Ollie and his needs or his wants or his preferences to check what mine are. So I'll be like, what do you want for dinner even, right? Mm-hmm. What are you craving for dinner? And then he'll say something and then I'll use what he says to check in with myself. And part of it I've realized is because sometimes what I need to check in with myself is an external stimuli. Like experimenting, trial and error is a huge way I actually figure out what I need. So sometimes I need to go all the way to the Italian restaurant to realize I didn't want Italian food.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really hard when you're dealing with a lot of uncertainty, or when you're in scarcity mindset and you feel like your time is limited, your money's limited. Like, how are you supposed to let yourself trial and error in the way you need to if your resources feel so scarce? And so I enter this optimizing phase. I'm often like asking other people and polling other people for what they want and checking how I feel against that. And it's not necessarily that's bad. Like, we don't like to label it as bad. It's just that it's a signal that I'm struggling to just go within myself without that external stimuli. And I can still do the same things, right? I can still use something external to me to figure out what's going on inside of me. It's like when you flip a coin, by the time the coin's down, you know what you wanted because you know which side you wished it would have landed on, right?
Correct.
So it's okay to use the external stimuli as long as you understand the intention behind what you're doing. But what ends up happening if you don't clock it, and this is what happened and happens that I'm currently repairing in my relationship, is because I didn't know what I was doing, and because I didn't actually give myself the permission to have the voice in the end, I would ask him what he wants for dinner or what he wanted to do about something or what he was interested in or how his day was or blah, 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 that our entire relationship was based on him. And I had created it because whenever he asked me, I would defer. He asked me, I defer. He asked me, I defer. And to some extent, he was just doing what I was teeing up. And he was asking what I wanted the whole time. I just wasn't listening to that half of it. And so then I started to create a story of, oh, there's no space for me and my needs. There's no space for what I want here. And that's a really tough spot to be, especially when the habits are like years deep. So this awareness of self, true awareness of self, and self-attunement as well, being able to attune to our own needs, is such a crucial skill. And when we are caught up in the bustle, and especially in the relationships, it gets really hard when we have a lot of people relying on us to attune to ourselves and to include ourselves in the needs that are on the table.
And it, which had me go way back when I was working with my therapist, another Madeline, a beautiful woman in my life. I remember one of the first questions she asked me was, who's your safety net? And I looked at her like, what do you mean? Me, I'm my safety net. And that was what I was feeling that I was creating. I was creating that old dynamic of, Cynthia, you don't have needs. That's not what this is about. It's about everyone else's needs. It's about really this really scary thing. And I'm curious of how you felt when you realized that the message I was giving you, Madeline, was, I can't be okay if you're not okay.
So I said this to you the other day, actually, which is, it feels like I'm not allowed to have needs, because there's a difference between being allowed, like having needs, and having someone be like, yeah, let's figure out how to address those. I'm a helping hand here. Give me a shovel. I'll dig alongside you, but you can do this and I'm here to help, versus, oh my God, like she has a need.
Yeah, yeah.
And it definitely, especially because I've lived abroad for 11 years. And so the amount or the level of needs I can have in our family are a little bit smaller or like specific. Mm. I can only really pick from a very specific buffet
basket
of ways that people can help me, right? Because you guys can't just drive over to my house or sit on the couch with me or grab a cup of coffee in the same way. As a result, when I have especially needs that I think are beyond the scope of what you can help with, oh boy. Right. And I have so much love and empathy and appreciation for how terrifying that is, to know that someone you care about is struggling deeply and that you can't help them in the way that they need to be needed. Like bumping up against being incapable of helping someone is, it's debilitating. Mm-hmm. And when you're already dealing with a lot of crap, having your identity shaken up on top of all of that's hard.
Right,
and,
right.
But people can feel it. So I can feel it. You could feel it. We could both feel it. We were feeding off. Our dogs were running around feeling it. Everybody was feeling it. We're like, we think we're so sly and self-managed.
Right. We are so not. Yeah.
So not. Yeah.
Our people knew. Our people, what we were determined not to let them necessarily in until we were.
And this is why I also think that it can be really hard to be a truth teller, to name the truth in a gentle way, and to say, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm observing. Mm-hmm. Not in an accusatory way of, oh, you're doing something, but there's disconnect in the space or there's fear here. I can feel it. Mm-hmm. And then allowing individual people to claim it. Mm-hmm. But I think this is something that I feel grateful for, is a relationship of honesty between the two of us. And and knowing and a deep trust that it works itself out. And that trust in another is so powerful, because I love that question from Madeline about the safety net. You really can't be your own safety net. It's not possible. No. You can have deep self-trust, and that's a huge mm-hmm. part of what I help my clients mm-hmm. create, because that's a huge part of what I've spent my life mm-hmm. creating is deep self-trust. However, we've created this weird narrative in the world that like you don't owe anybody anything and you should be able to do everything on your own. And I'm like, scusi? Because as a person whose needs and intensity is so big in the world that I can't fulfill my basic needs on my own, never mind my more like intense right. ones or creative ones or out of the box ones, that's a terrifying notion that I literally refuse to accept. We need yeah. each other. We need community. And yeah, there are going to be times in my life where that's going to come from friends. There are going to be times in my life, hopefully, that comes from family. Mm-hmm. But during the times when that those options weren't available to me in the last year, it was my coach. And mm-hmm. I used to grapple with this a lot about, am I okay with knowing that I'm going to probably have to pay for support for my whole life? And it's a huge privilege to be able to say I can do that or that I choose mm-hmm. to do that. But mm-hmm. the answer is yes. And yes. that's because I never see a time when I am mm-hmm. not going to need support mm-hmm. with my needs. And mm-hmm. I know when I have the support that I need, I thrive. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I thrive, I do amazing things in the world and mm-hmm. I help people. And so if I'm not doing amazing things in the world and creating, it means I'm not getting the support I need. This is part of the budget of my life, is I mm-hmm. always want to be putting myself in places where I can get the support that I need to thrive, because I know what I'm mm-hmm. capable of. And that's mm-hmm. self-trust. It's knowing yeah. that when I have a safety net, mm-hmm. I do incredible things. But right. pretending I don't need a safety net makes it so I never actually move forward. I never walk on the tightrope. I refuse, because yeah. I know I'm going to die. And obviously mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. going to take the chances of right. I either make it across or I plummet to my death.
Exactly. Too binary. But it's so important. I mean, the one of the lessons, just piggybacking on what you're saying, that I learned for myself is that, yes, all of that is so important. And I'm the best version of myself when I am in community, when I'm sharing, oh, even if I've come to an insight on my own first, but that when I'm sharing it with someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing their story of their insight and we're collaborating. We're just in community, that we don't have to feel like we're an island and we have to figure everything out for ourselves, that we can, it's just so much richer when we figure stuff out and when we do support each other, when there's this reciprocity. I'm reading this really great book called Braiding Sweetgrass. And she talks about all of these indigenous stories about nature and the relationship of the indigenous people with nature. And she's a botanist and blah, blah, blah. And the theme all the way through is reciprocity, reciprocity, reciprocity. And it's not isolation, right? Or all on your own. That was a really important, I call it coming back to myself, coming back to that self-trust.
Actually, this is the cornerstone of one of the things that really frustrates me about mm. Western medicine and science mm. is this concept that everything has to go through a whole bunch of trials and we completely erase indigenous wisdom and knowledge. It really bothers me, because one of the things that I've noticed in my own practice is how powerful it is to learn through experience. And mm. learn through essentially self-disclosure, which is like a huge no-no in a lot of traditional therapeutic models mm-hmm. and frameworks. Mm-hmm. And I think that self-disclosure is a huge component of why we grow so well in group and in community. Hearing each other's stories and learning from each other's experiences. We've had to have hundreds of books come out and papers come out about vulnerability to drive home a point that when we share stories with each other, it helps. Duh. Yeah. Honestly, I understand why things are happening the way that they're happening, but sometimes we just have to level ourselves. I watched a really funny TikTok video where this study came out recently that said dancing is more effective than antidepressants, actually, just dancing for and somatic experiencing. And I'm like, and it cut to this woman who was like, this is the category that I like to call, you should have just listened to people of color and indigenous people. And I was like, right. yep. So there's just so much unnecessary relearning that right. we are doing because we're just not mm-hmm. listening to things mm-hmm. that have been around for ages because we're mm-hmm. trying to put everything through this specific model. And so I think there's something really powerful about learning through shared experience and learning through our own experience as well. Like mm-hmm. I learn so much by going back through old text threads with myself and mm-hmm. journal entries to myself mm-hmm. and notes and cards and letters and mm-hmm. evidence, just this evidence mm-hmm. of thoughts and celebration, a life lived. I think there's so much to mine from experience, not from expertise, but from experience, from having right. looked at when I do live my life, what happens? Because so much of my life when I'm in overthinking spirals and anxiety is based on consumption. Consuming mm-hmm. insights, consuming ideas, consuming mm-hmm. knowledge, and not enough creating. And that is exactly what we got, the bind we got in, very mm-hmm. much driven by my chaos of consuming ideas and not creating enough. And part of it is when your life overwhelms you, when my life overwhelms me, when I feel really time scarce, kind of objectively because I am doing a lot and I'm not paying enough attention to creation and I'm not paying enough attention to creativity in general, mm-hmm. I end up in consumption land and mm-hmm. it's too much input and not enough output. And that is absolutely debilitating. So mm-hmm. sharing our stories is also a form of output. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hearing and reading can be beautiful. And we need to have this other side of it, of mm-hmm. sharing what's on our mind, sharing what's happening to us, mm-hmm. sharing that connection, mm-hmm. output driven as well. Not mm-hmm. in an achievement way, but in a no. connection driven way.
And that's why we kept coming back to, we have to get back to the podcast. Right. We have to get that because this was one of the things that we realized early on was an enrichment in our lives because it was a vehicle of us being able to share not our expertise, but our lived experiences. It took us a bit to get back there, right? Because like you were saying, we were being consumers, but we're back.
We are, and we're tatted. We've got tattoos. That's how much faith we have in Nomi, is that we literally have the logo in two halves right. tattooed on our skull. Right. So the belief yeah. is always there. The belief is always there.
But we're back with lessons learned, with new hopes for how we want to show up for each other as well as ourselves. And for me, a lot of mine wasn't reinventing a new wheel. I was just coming home to myself, and it was waiting, and it was back to the basics. It was back to the basics of being, who did I want to be in the world? Not just what I wanted to do, and the basics of setting intentions and making sure there's room for creativity and curiosity. And what does it really mean to be curious in your life, Cynthia, and being brave.
Yeah, very true. I'm just looking at my journal because I had something I wanted to read. Circling back to the beginning of the episode, we were talking about expansion, and I wrote a note to myself because this was a huge part of my self-validation practice. As my community and support system wasn't there for me, I tried to write to myself what I was hoping someone else would say. And it's really beautiful, actually, reading back through them at a different time. In the moment, I don't know that it had the intense impact I wanted it to, but now that I've forgotten the words, reading those words and knowing they're from myself later has been really nice. I was trying to expand, and this was what I wrote. The nestling into this reality where things are good is so tempting to rush through. Do not rush here. My God, do not rush here. This is the place you have been hurrying to arrive at. Do not get so lost in the intoxication of a busy life that you forget to allow yourself to arrive. Arrive. Sit in it, not to relax or to rest, but to absorb. Fill your entire self, that whole vessel, with what you have made and gathered and grown. Let this be what stretches and expands you. Let this be what grows your heart. Let this let go of the rest. You are arriving. Enjoy the arriving before you make it into a beginning.
That's beautiful.
Damn, I can be so poetic sometimes.
You can be. Yeah, you can. Your writing, it has always, yeah, inspired me, and it's so profound. Yeah.
So let's end with a quote from you, Mom, although we've had plenty of quotes and a whole journal reading. So today has been a really rich episode for our debut back into the world. But yeah. What quote would you like to end us with?
The quote by Jung Pueblo, which was sometimes we go back to our old life for a little while to remember that it no longer fits.
So we are really happy to be back. We are also grateful for all of you who made sure that we knew that you were waiting for the podcast to come back.
Yeah, we appreciate your patience and we appreciate your nudges. Yes.
Very true. Very true. If you would like to work with either of us, if you're not already working with us, please check out the show notes. You can, of course, reach out to us at podcast@nomi.com just for letting us know what topics you want us to discuss or to actually get on our calendar to make sure that we can meet you and tell you how you could work with us more closely. Also, keep an eye on the show notes because there we usually have links to free resources and tools that you can jump into. And we are going to be launching some really cool things in the new year. And so if you want to be one of the first people to be exposed to that, we expect spaces to fill up pretty quickly as they usually do in our lovely community. So our email lists are always the first one to know about what's going on for us. Honestly, part of me forgets how we even close these things off, but I think we've hit most of the marks. And until next time,
be well.
Thanks for listening to Being Curious with Nomi. Did you learn something new or feel inspired by something in this episode? Then please pass it along. Sharing our podcast is the best way you can help us to inspire more self-awareness and curiosity in the world. And if you're curious about how we can support you, head to nomi.com to see how we can work together one-to-one. We know it takes a village, and we're so grateful you're a part of ours. This is Madeline asking you to be good to you.